We read for you. Atlantis, the Dark Continent. A book by Paul Williamson and Linda Braithwaite. Read by JP on Wolf Spirit Radio. Atlantis, the Dark Continent. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. And you are. So, episode 5. Here we are. Episode 5, page 99. Of Atlantis, the Dark Continent by Paul Williamson and Linda Braithwaite. Chapter 12, The Regressions, The Giant Crystal War. Denise and Lynn. Denise experienced herself as Emilo, the healer who attended to Braddon's shoulder when he had his operation with a small crystal implant. It was a very painful life for her, especially the way she was tortured by the soldiers in the sanctuary. In her regression, Denise felt very strongly Emilo's friendship to Braddon. Perhaps more than anything else, Emilo was aware of Braddon's dual nature, the sensitive feeling side, as well as the hard, ambitious, clinical military side. Emilo responded to the gentle feeling side of Braddon and always helped and wished that he could help Braddon so that this side of him could become more ascendant. Emilo was quite a solitary man, but very caring. When he knew that military were taking over the sanctuaries, he could not stay within the military any longer. His life was devoted to healing, but those in the sanctuary were suspicious of him because of his military connections. So, this left him feeling very alone. When Braddon ordered the torturing of the healers, Emilo did not hate him for it. He just wished that Braddon had acted differently. In asking Braddon to kill him, Emilo was appealing to Braddon's. Emilo was appealing to Braddon's friendship. The bond between them was very strong. Emilo offered Braddon his best chance of being able to turn his life around and live more compassionately. However, Braddon did not take up the chances offered to him. For Denise, regressing to Emilo's life has been very tough. The torture he suffered has been felt intensely by Denise. Emilo lived a life true to himself, and he was tested in his character. This experience links with other earlier lives where Denise's soul was caught up in conflicts between the military and the healers. In the earlier lives, Denise's soul had tended to react with hate and bitterness to what the military were doing. This did not have such beneficial consequences. In Emilo's life, though, he resisted this, and his last action was a reconciliation of friendship with Braddon. For Denise, though, these lives have left a residue of fear around her inclination to do healing work. Processing these regressions is helping her to gain more confidence to pursue a healing path more actively in her present life, and to know that it is safe for her to do so. I identified the soul of Lynn as my female companion with whom I worked and died in that life. During her regression to this life, Lynn felt a tremendous sadness in her heart and a fear. As a peacemaker working with me, she felt so hopeless that whatever we tried met with failure. She recalled us trying to help the healers in the sanctuaries coordinate their response to the military, but they were used to acting independently. With the military, she felt an acute mistrust. And then the end, where she was on the mountain with me, with the energy war raging around us and the mountain collapsed on top of us. This was terrible. Braddon and the Peacemaker in review. For Linda, regressing to Braddon was again very difficult. Initially, she omitted sections of the life, such as the torture of the healers. She had a great resistance to confronting that. Part of the reason she eventually did so was because of the impact that regressing to Emilo had upon Denise's life. As Denise emotionally informed Linda of a few details concerning her regression, this brought up very uncomfortable feelings for Linda. Because these feelings disturbed her so much, and she could not shift them from her mind, she had to go through the regression in order to clear this. Braddon was a complex character, presented with a conflict between his aggressive, assertive side and the more compassionate, caring aspects of his being. Ultimately, the more aggressive, power-seeking side was dominant, and so the soul of Braddon felt some responsibility for contributing to the war that destroyed so much of the land. This brought a lot of suffering to Linda, although there were obviously many thousands of other people involved too. One of Linda's traits in her present life is just that she is very afraid of people using power to hurt others, and she has a very strong wish not to hurt anyone herself. The roots of these fears and yearnings could be traced to this life as Braddon and many other lives that Linda lived on Atlantis, where, faced with a choice between the use of power and violence or compassion, she chose the less caring option and caused a lot of hurt to others and herself. For me, I am aware that in my lifetime from this period, I could also have taken a militaristic path, because both my parents were involved in the military and urging me to follow family tradition. However, I resisted this and instead reacted against the military and tried to find peaceful methods of avoiding conflicts. The main residue left over for me connecting with my present life is the fear of war and large-scale disasters, a fear which I felt very acutely during my regression. Albany's commentary relating to the giant crystal war. Paul asks, in terms of the history of Atlantis, could you please describe how the events leading up to the giant crystal war unfolded? Albany. Following the foundation lives and the initial settlement of the continent, the people migrated across the land, from both the north and south, for it was populated at both ends, into the interior. We are talking about a very large geographical area, and the continent was very rich in crystals, for it was very new and very alive with earth energy and a very vibrant place. Eventually, the people began to find these crystals and realize, because they were so sensitive, that these things had life. They had energy, and this energy could be used. The energy was used for healing, for working with the earth, and for empowering the earth's auric field. This is why it was there originally. But people learned through various means that they could use this energy to help their fellow human beings and to help the areas where they lived in various ways. But of course, like all things, when power is involved, eventually someone will find out how to use it in a negative way and against human beings for various reasons of greed and the need to control others and to be in charge or to be better than anyone else. This, unfortunately, has always been a trait and presumably always will be in the physical. Over a long period of time, and we're talking thousands of years, gradually, what you would probably describe as technology developed, and the ability to use these large crystals in different ways and to tap into those massive energies. There were around the whole area from time to time small skirmishes and disputes over territory. For some areas were better than others, some were richer than others for various reasons, either from the fertility, the earth energies, or even something like accessibility to the coast for commerce and various other things. Most of these things are desirable, and others would jealously look at what the people next to them had and desire it, and if they felt stronger, they would go and take it. Then, as these situations developed, the ones with the stronger weapons or the largest army were the ones who would usually win. So, methods were devised to use the various energies as an aggressive force, as an offensive weapon, or to help the people to conquer others and oppress their fellow man. This, as I say, happened over thousands of years. Eventually, they knew that they could control this crystal energy to destroy other people, buildings, and the land. But what they didn't realize is that this energy is given by the earth It is given with love, and it is given to help others and to help the earth herself. And of course, when you go against this, this creates a lot of problems. And eventually, this power becomes uncontrollable, for it is a very, very strong energy. And although the men and women using it thought they could control it, they were very wrong. And it was really much beyond their capabilities. And eventually, it went out of control. This is what happened in the time you have described. It was decided to use the crystal energy to destroy the enemy, as they saw, or the invading people. But as soon as one point was triggered and used, it set up a network throughout the southern half of the continent, and all the various points where the crystals were situated were activated. The earth reacted to this, and because the energy was so great, it caused a reaction deep within the core of the earth. The only way the earth could survive and look after herself was to move and break these channels apart. And that is what happened. For the energies triggered the movement of the earth. Because these energies were very negative, they were actually painful to the earth herself, and the only way to break it was to move and split the crystals apart to stop the production of this energy which had been triggered by people. Therefore, there were earthquakes. The mountains were falling, the volcanoes were erupting. All the various things which you would associate with movement of the earth happened. These in themselves killed a lot of people. But a lot of people were killed by the forces involved in this energy. The explosive forces which destroyed buildings and also destroyed the people. For these energies also have a disruptive effect upon the human aura. And if anyone comes into contact with the direct beam of this energy, of this magnitude, it will destroy them. And that, of course, did happen. Most of the population died of the earth's movements, and the various upheavals which took place, causing buildings to fall, and things like that. But it was very, very bad. The earth reacted below the central fault line of Atlantis, and that central fault moved in such a way to act like a safety valve. The northern part of the continent was virtually untouched. It felt tremors, and they were very aware, of course, that something was going on, but the destruction was confined to the southern part, south of the major fault line, for that was where most of the energy was being used at that time. And the earth decided to split lengthways and pull the mountains apart, thus breaking the link between all the various beds of crystal that were being used at that time. The effects of a lot of this energy caused a change in the constitution of the atmosphere. It made the vegetation die, and it killed a lot of the animals also. It made the atmosphere poisonous for a short while around that area. Eventually, this came back to normal, and the earth healed all the various problems that were there. It healed the wounds and sealed all the various cracks that had appeared, and the volcanoes settled down. The mountains settled into a new formation, and the land settled into a slightly different shape. Eventually, it was colonized again by the birds, the vegetation, and the animals, and then people. Paul asks, how did the Crystal War get started? Albany. It was mainly due to the civilian politician side of things rather than the military necessarily. The military simply went along with the various factions involved. It was, as you can appreciate, quite complicated, for there were many, many groups of people involved who were also basically antagonistic to each other. Each was jockeying for position. There were many ambitious and greedy politicians who wished to be in charge of their section, or probably in charge of someone else's section as well, and therefore they were willing to use any kind of force to get their way. This involved using their own military forces which they had at their command and their bidding. Within the military, you also had ambitious people, so you had a catalyst here. You had a large melting pot of people who were all wanting the same thing and all quite serious in their ambitions. They would stop at nothing to get what they wanted. And it is difficult to pinpoint one place where it started. It was almost simultaneous, for here was almost a strange connection. For by now, the Earth knew what was happening. It was throughout the southern part of the continent that these crystals had been taken over. They had been contacted by the various military minds and the various people who wanted to use them for the ulterior purposes and for attack and defense. They used defense, as a good excuse, for really what they're wanting was an offensive weapon, so they could wipe out their enemy. Remember, crystal is alive, and crystal has a memory and a living heart, and therefore knows what is going on around it. It knew that in many places upon the surface of the earth these things were being done and planned. Also, by then the earth, within the main power centers, had realized that this was a very dangerous situation. Basically, if these places were taken over, it was resolved deep within to allow this reaction to take place to some degree. And when it got very imminent, the whole lot would be triggered together. So in some ways, the earth almost triggered herself to do this, for it was realized that if one person started this on his own, there would be a severe imbalance of the energies, and it was far safer for the earth herself, and not the people on the earth, to trigger this effect simultaneously, and simply pull things apart. Paul. So you feel the earth influence people's minds into triggering this altogether? Yes, exactly. This is why it happens so simultaneously, for that would not happen under normal circumstances. Each person would probably think about it at a slightly different time, so the general feeling was put that this was the right time to do it, and all did it together. This was what the earth wanted, to rid itself of this problem that was bubbling up among the human population. Paul asks, can you say something about the peace negotiators? Albany. There were many thousands of people wanting to help. This was happening across the land, and these people were trying to develop a peaceful settlement. For the negotiators and peacemakers were very sensitive people, and they could sense the agitation within the earth itself, and they knew, I'm sure, that this impending disaster was coming. They were trying desperately to veer the military minds and the political minds away from the course of aggression. But, of course, this did not happen. Paul asks, what happened after the war? Albany. The southern part of Atlantis, throughout the rest of its history, became less populated. For people remembered. There was a memory of this dreadful thing that had happened, and people were somewhat afraid to go to the south. People travelled there, and quite a few migrated there to live. For it was still very beautiful once it had recovered. But there was a lot of repair work to do. There was a lot of work done by the people who had caused these problems, and as they came back in future lives to repair and balance the damage and the energy lines of the earth. For the energy lines of the earth were severely disrupted and needed reforming. And although the earth can do this to some degree, some help from people does make this a little better. And because humans were helping with this, helping to establish the love link between the human and the earth, this was also very important, for them to show that they really cared about the earth, to help repair and put back a lot of the damage that had been caused by them. Most of the people working in this were the people involved in the destruction. Paul, how did this particular destruction link in with the final destruction? Albany, it was very similar. All the people who were killed in this energy war were the people who had the knowledge to use these large crystals and to use them for destructive purposes. They all died, of course, they were reborn. But they were reborn with the memories suppressed and the knowledge not accessible. So the knowledge of how to do these things was lost for a long time. And then eventually the knowledge began to resurface. And the same things began to happen. For people essentially do not change. And jealousy and wars started. The large crystal energies were once again found and tapped into, and this time the whole continent was destroyed, for they got no second chance with it. There are places on the earth now which contain large crystal beds. Most of them are completely unknown. But in Atlantis there were a lot. It was a very alive and vibrant place, as I have said, and the crystal energies were there for people to use. The healing sanctuaries remained virtually untouched, particularly in the north, where there were quite a lot. These were allowed to remain because they helped and healed people. They had a good purpose. A lot were very inaccessible and difficult to get to. This was deliberate. And the crystals used were much, much smaller than the ones that were used in the destruction of the land. They were very, very big and very, very powerful. But, as I say, these skills were learned again, and where they were learned in a way that which could be used with smaller type crystals, and eventually the earth broke the continent apart and destroyed it with the waves. Paul asks, when did the crystal war take place in the overall scheme of things? Albany. I actually gave Linda the date of 17,500 BC, which is halfway along the existence of the continent. It took 1,500 to 2,000 years to recover. It takes a long time for nature to recover, but it does happen, and it becomes just as rich and lush as it was originally. Chapter 13, The Golden Age. Okay, here we go. So, now where were we? Where's the book? There it is. Over here. Now for a nice chapter. So, this is Atlantis, the Dark Continent, read by JP. Chapter 13, The Golden Age. Following on from the Crystal War, civilization upon Atlantis was traumatized. I'm sure it took some considerable time for the population to recover. Meanwhile, there was also a strong reaction against war and fighting. From this unfolded an inspiring and beautiful era of relative peace, where all that was most good potentially upon Atlantis flourished. I have called this time period within the history of Atlantis the Golden Age. Linda and I have explored a number of regressions to different lives within this period. They have tended to be very positive lives where much was achieved. We have chosen Linda's regression to her lives as Elena, as one to include in the book, as a lifetime that could encompass the mood and activity of what life was like in this Golden Age. It was a life where Linda's soul and my soul were closely associated. So, I have also included some aspects of my experience as Elena's partner, John, to complement what Linda has related. At the end of the chapter is a commentary by Albany to help place the Golden Age within the overall context of the history of Atlantis. Linda's regression. Elena. I am in a dense forest which feels so beautiful. There are huge, brightly colored flowers. Tall trees and rich vegetation, and also lots of birds. In particular, I like the blue and yellow ones with long red tail feathers. I love coming here. This area has tremendous life and energy, and I can feel it all around me. Along the forest floor, I can see paths of light, glowing lines of energy that seem to crisscross the earth's surface. They make my feet tingle as I dance and skip along them. Although I am always happy to be here, today is tinged with sadness, for I am saying goodbye to my friends, the trees and birds. I have to go away to university to study, which I want to do. This requires me to travel to the city of Thrombus, many miles north of us. I live with my parents in a small town. My father is a teacher here and is well respected. I am very fond of him. He has taught me well, and I am planning to become an architect. I want to study the structure and design of buildings in relation to the earth energies that I feel so strongly. This is very important to the happiness of a building and the people who will use it. Our little town is built around a very strong earth energy point. It is situated where there is a natural spring in the middle of the square. This is now a fountain, and is the central place within our community. The buildings here are of a white clay-like construction with flat roofs. Many have gardens on the top, and there are bright-coloured flowering plants cascading down the walls. It is a lovely place, and I will miss it. I hope the city people are friendly. I don't know much about it and have only heard rumours, and so I feel both apprehensive and excited. It is later. Now I am at the university and have been studying some time, enjoying my work and life very much. I really like the city, which is huge, and its people. When I first arrived and looked at it from the southern hills, I couldn't believe anywhere could be that big. Now it is familiar and I know it well. The city is in two distinct halves, separated by a wide river that flows east into the sea. The city is well laid out, with many lovely squares and gardens. There are busy harbours and a large commercial area. There is an earth temple and a large healing temple. Thrombus is one of the main centres hereabouts, and much good work is done there. The buildings are mainly of white smooth stone, with bright decorations of coloured tiles. Some have pictures painted on the walls themselves. The roofs are nearly all terracotta tiles, which adds to the bright mix of colours. The university is a large complex of different buildings, roughly in the centre. It runs alongside the river and has many secluded courtyards and gardens that go down to the water's edge. Within one of the buildings is a large and comprehensive library with a large number of books and manuscripts, some of which are very old. They are usually leather-bound and very heavy. There are maps and atlases, some so ancient they are on skins attached to scrolls of wood. We have to take great care handling them, as they are very fragile. They tell us of our ancestors from thousands of years ago, and how they crossed the ocean from another land. I like to take books out into the library garden and sit by the river. The garden overlooks the northern part of the town, and it is a tranquil spot. Above the houses and rooftops is a low range of tree-covered hills. And on top of the highest point, clearly visible from the garden, is an ancient earth temple. When I have time for my studies, I like to climb up through the woodland and visit this amazing place. It is quite a steep climb. The ruins themselves are clear of the trees on an outcrop of crumbly rock. It is quite a scramble to get to the top. The old walls are broken and in places completely gone, but on some of them old paintings and frescoes can be seen on crumbling plaster. The main structure is circular, and the floor still has much of the beautiful mosaic pattern of a star, in the centre of which is a tall black stone. When I first came here, I touched the stone instinctively and received quite an energy shock. It hurt my arm, and I realized that although neglected for many years, this place still had tremendous power. Now I have been here many times, and the stone and I are tuned in to each other, and I can meditate here in perfect tranquility. When I do, I see the lines of earth energy reaching out across our land and beyond the sea. Intuitively, I sense that the energy links in with a gigantic network all across our earth and is alive and vibrant. It feels quite wonderful to join in with this energy, and I always feel energized myself afterwards. Now, I have nearly finished my studies. Last night, I had a strange and disturbing experience. My father was standing in my bedroom here in the university. He looked calm and serene, and seemed to glow with an eternal light. He smiled so lovingly at me, but did not speak. It was just like he was here because he seemed so real. It is 3 days later. This morning I have had news that my father died suddenly the night I saw him, and I feel very upset, for I loved him so much. We were very close. For some time I haven't been home, and I wish now I had made the effort. I have been much too preoccupied with my friend, John. He is a fellow student, and we have been seeing each other for a while now. I love him, and when we qualify, we're planning to stay together. Now, I go to him, and he comforts me, and he helps me to cope with the sadness and the loss. It is only a week before our graduation, and I feel bad that my father won't be there. Although something inside me says he will, but not physically. John believes in this too, and it helps me to hold on to this thought. Now the day of my graduation is over. It has been an emotional day, which felt wonderful. I sense my father's presence and his pride. I know I have John now, and he is all I need. John and I have been married for 2 years now. We are very happy, and both practice as architects in the town, helping to create and design new buildings with the principles of earth energy, allowing them to be happy, healthy spaces. Healthy, happy places. We ourselves have a large house on the south side of the city, high up in our hillside. It is quiet and peaceful here, and we have lovely views north, over the city to the ruined temple. I am feeling elated, as I am sure I am pregnant. As yet, I haven't told John, but I feel he may know, as we are almost telepathic and communicate easily. He has been down in the city today, working on one of his buildings, and I know he has set off to come home. I am in our study on the upper floor, feeling uneasy. I go out on the balcony and look north. Oh, I can see earthlights, flashes of light, above the town and the old temple. There's going to be an earthquake, I know it, I can feel it. We get lots of minor tremors, but I know this is going to be a big one because it feels different. Quickly, I need to leave the house, get outside. Rushing to get down the stairs, I feel the first shocks trembling through my feet. As I reach the lower stairs, I slip in my haste and fall, knocking myself on a large cupboard at the bottom. Briefly, I am dazed, then pick myself up and run out into the street. Desperately, I am looking for John, hoping he is safe. I am aware, in my mind, I hear him calling me, but I feel very strange, lightheaded and dizzy, hardly seeming to know what is happening. Then I feel a sudden, fierce pain in my stomach. John is here with his arms around me, and I am bleeding, lots of blood. I am aware of losing consciousness. I sense myself to be floating above my body and the scene. There is lots of falling masonry round me. I can see John picking my body up in his arms, taking me to the nearby healing sanctuary. Then I experience a brilliant light all around me. My father is here, and he is smiling at me lovingly. I long to go to him. I can feel the most wonderful love and peace, which is so beautiful. However, he is shaking his head and saying, "It's not my time. I have to go back to do the work I was born to do." My spirit guide is here too, and he is helping me to accept this. I feel so good here. Yet I am torn between my desire to stay in this wonderful place and my love for John. I need to go to him. I'm just going to take a quick break. Here's a song about reincarnation. Jerry Rafferty. Get it right next time. Aware of waking up, lying in a bed in the healing sanctuary, and John holding my hand. He looks so worried, but he is delighted when I open my eyes. John tells me I've been very ill, and I have lost our baby. I bled a lot and almost died. The senior healer here, a lovely, serene woman, has been helping me and has a special interest in my progress. She says I have been sent back to work with the earth energy, to help with the vast amount of repair work that is needed across our land, not just from the earthquake, which has done much damage, but from previous times when our earth was hurt and damaged by man. She tells me that John and I have to work together on this, and she will teach us. Already we are sensitive to the needs of the earth, and are told we can have a talent between us to become a powerful combination for healing and rebuilding. Hundreds of people have been killed in the earthquake, which has torn Thrombus in half. The eastern part has sunk beneath the sea, and the harbour has gone. Sadly, the old temple has been destroyed, and the hill it was on is now a high cliff overlooking the sea. This is all very hard to take in. The healer is gentle with me, but I now know I have work to do, and I want to get on with it. It is later, and I am with John. We are working together to build a new earth temple. This is to replace the old one that was destroyed in the earthquake. The new power point is situated about 5 miles further west. The grid of energy lines were disrupted by the earthquake, and the new temple must be built here on the new alignment. It is a big project, but vitally important to the health of the area. The people of the city have picked up their lives now and are gradually adjusting to the new land configurations. In time, the community will migrate to the area here around the new temple, which will be a good place. John and I are moving slabs of blue stone to form the ribs of the main hall. Sitting together, feet to feet and palm to palm, we begin to circulate energy between ourselves, moving it faster and faster till it becomes a spiraling vortex. Then we move slightly further apart, allowing the spin to increase so it flattens and forms into a ball. This has tremendous power, and we can manipulate this ball with mental control underneath the blocks of stone. This energy supports their weight so they can move with ease. Then the stones can be easily handled and guided into the positions required. To maintain the power of the energy balls needs a lot of concentration from us, and can be quite tiring work. In the center of the main hall is a black stone, like the one in the old temple I used to visit. This acts like a needle in the power point and increases the energy flowing into the earth lines. This is the most important function of the temple. There will also be a large healing complex here with many rooms. These are roofed with different colored glass for different energy values to use in different conditions. There is also a beautiful circular garden around a natural spring to bring the energy of the water spirit within the temple as well. This is a beautiful and powerful place, and John and I are proud to be part of its inception. It is later, and our work is taking us to many places. We have traveled to the west coast and are helping with the building and setting up of an observatory and scientific complex to study the earth energies and the stars. This construction is being built in the hills behind a small town. We have placed the uprights, which are made of redstone, covered with patterns and lifted them into place with energy balls as before. The roof is made up of triangular sections, and the temple has to be aligned with the sunset and the blue star Iridian. There is an older man who is in charge of this, and he knows about the stars and the various calculations we need to do this. This man is an experienced astronomer and has much knowledge. We both love talking to him when we have time. It is fascinating. He has several special instruments he uses to study the star patterns and many charts and maps. Behind the main circular building we are constructing is a long earthwork. It tapers over about half a mile to a narrow point due east. Where it ends is another black needle stone for the energy. This again links and strengthens the earth energy lines. Gradually, over some time, we travel all over the southern part of the continent, doing building and main construction design for the earth temples and sanctuaries. There is much to be done. The area is empty in many places and sparsely populated. We also know, hundreds of years ago, the earth was devastated by some ancient event that disrupted the grid lines and caused great destruction and pain to the land. Our main work has been to heal this damage so the earth can renew herself better. It is later. John and I have been drawn to a really desolate place. This is the furthest south anyone can go, the very tip of the landmass, and the devastation is terrible. Nothing grows here. The soil is dry and barren, and there is an awful, sad and angry atmosphere and feel to it. As we leave the last village and walk into the dead area, I can feel through my feet, terrible pain and sadness from the earth. We've come to one of our most important jobs, to heal and redress the massive damage that was done here. This must have happened centuries ago. The air is silent, an eerie silence. No birds, no life, just deadness. John and I hold hands as we walk to support each other, for we both feel very uneasy and unsettled. After some time, we come to a huge hollow, a crater, about a quarter of a mile across. I feel some kind of explosion has taken place here. This is where the bad energy is emanating from. I can feel waves of dark vibrations coming out of it, making me feel sick and dizzy. John is also affected, but we know this is where our stone must go. The next day, John and I transport the black stone we have brought on the energy balls to the crater. After protecting our own energy fields, we prepare the earth, and gradually ease the stone into place. Immediately, the inrush of powerful healing energy is felt. It is wonderful, so amazing. I feel my skin tingling and my hair rising as these powerful energies flow through us. Holding each other delightedly, we then join hands and dance around the stone, helping the energies to spiral and grow. Eventually, we both collapse in an exhausted heap on the ground, quite spent, and sleep there. Awakening to the wonderful sound of birdsong, I look across to John, who is also stirring. We both smile. The sense of deep contentment between us is so beautiful. I feel love for him that is so strong and enhanced by the love of the earth herself. We both know, as we walk back into the village with our arms around each other, that the healing is working, and already life is returning to this empty place. I am about 60 now, and standing on the cliffs to the north of Thrumbis, where the old temple used to be. John died 2 years ago, and I am desperately lonely. I miss him. Together, we had a long and happy life and did much good work. His death was caused by an illness to his chest. I don't want to live any longer without him. I was planning to kill myself by jumping off the cliffs into the sea, but I'm frightened and I can't do it. My mind is in turmoil as I turn away. The land beneath my feet crumbles and I slip over the edge. Vaguely I am aware of falling. Then I seem to be watching my own body as it falls onto the rocks below. There is light all around me, and through it, coming towards me, is John. He looks so young and radiant. Putting his arms around me, it feels very beautiful to be with him again. My father and mother are here too, and I feel deep happiness. They take me to rest. I feel very pleased with that life, and realize now, of course, that the work we did was planned, and that feels good too. Paul's experience of being John. It was about 8 months after Linda had her regression as Elena that I went through my 2 regression sessions being John. By this time, I had largely forgotten with my normal consciousness most of the details of Linda's experience. Therefore, when we compared notes at the ends of the sessions, we were surprised and delighted at how accurately the 2 sets of regressions had matched up. However, as you can imagine, the emphasis of what was most important for me to experience was quite different to that of Linda. While not wanting to go through the whole of my regressions to John, I would like to mention some details and go through some of my experiences as I remember them. I hope that this will be of interest, especially to relating to what life was like in this golden age period of Atlantis, and the sensitivity which people could feel during this period. As John, I grew up in a small city by the sea, just to the south of the more major city where we later studied architecture together. Like Elena, I had a very loving and supportive family base. For me, my mother was very significant, and her sensitivity to energies was influential on how I feel. For me, my mother was very significant, and her sensitivity to energies was influential on how I developed. However, it was through my father, who was a builder, that I chose to study architecture. Just before I went away to the university, I was a witness to a dramatic storm which had a great impact upon me. As it came towards us from across the sea, I watched it outdoors from the balcony of our house. I was very aware of the power of nature. The storm seemed quite angry, an angry release of violent energy. It made me realize that the power of nature and the earth spirit was stronger than me. I felt very humble in the presence of the storm, and did not feel that the earth spirit was opposing me. But I wanted to listen to what the storm was telling me. It felt like the spirit of the earth was talking, not only to me, but to the people, telling us to be true to the one way, to be in harmony with the earth. As I watched the lightning cause damage and destruction around me, I stood on the balcony, letting myself become drenched in the rain, daring the power of the storm to take me if it wanted, yet trusting that I was safe at the same time. We were told in the legends of the former destruction of our land how people had abused crystals and the earth energy, and how the earth had finally reacted. I felt a strong need to respect the earth, and feel that this was much attuned to the spirit of the age in which I was living. Many other people felt very similar to me. At the university, I was aware of a surging idealism. People wanted to build a peaceful society with a common purpose, so there would not be wars and struggles of one group against another. There were many talks at the university about the need to repair the damage of the past, to form links of cooperation right across our land. In my heart, as John, I felt inspired by these ideals. I wanted to help all I could, to join in with all the people wanting this, to travel and work with many others. Military establishments had been banned, apart from a small navy presence designed to protect our land from invaders coming from other lands. We had civilian governments and wanted open access and freedom of movements for all the people of our vast land. There was much travel between the various cities, forging links, gaining understanding and learning how to work together. This is how we wanted our society to be. The healers and people sensitive to spiritual energies were very prominent in the administration of our affairs. In my work as an architect, I had to learn that the healers would determine the placement of buildings and towns in harmony with the meridian lines of earth energies, so as not to damage the fabric of psychic spiritual energy connecting the earth together. We could create the form and structure of the buildings themselves, but this had to be in harmony with the earth energy as well. Much of our training was concerned with learning about these energies. Not everyone was sensitive to spiritual energies. However, in general, people were very concerned about spiritual worship. Most houses had within them, in the center of the building, a sacred meditation room. Usually, this would be a circular room with a sacred flame at its heart that would burn continuously. There was a large temple within the town where people could go and find peace and contentment. People from our community would come together to celebrate festivals here. There would be festivals honoring the sun and moon cycles, plus important rituals connected with planting and harvesting associated with our seasons. Within the temple, there were people who studied the stars and planets in our skies. It was felt that just as our earth had a living spirit, so did the planets and stars which you saw in the sky. The energies from these bodies could influence us and affect our well-being. There were suggestions from ancient texts that originally our civilization on earth was seeded from people who came from planets far away. This was a time when people were very eager to learn more about their history. Ancient texts and scrolls were being discovered by research expeditions and deposited in the university libraries. Such potential knowledge aroused a great deal of curiosity in me. that'll do for today. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.